Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
This is a speaker meeting. Francesca will speak for 10 minutes and then turn the meeting over to our main speaker, Colin, who will share his experience, strength, and hope. Now I'd like to introduce Francesca.
Hi, I'm Francesca. I'm an alcoholic.
I'm Francesca.
So I have time myself?
I can let you know.
That'd be great.
It's 8:10, you got 10 minutes.
Thanks, Jen, for asking me to speak. My sobriety date is July 25th, 2010. I've a little over 4 years. I was 24 years old when I got sober. I'm 28 now. I have a sponsor in New York who I speak to with a good deal of frequency. And I sponsor other women, and I've gone through the steps a few times, and I've been almost pretty much completed all my amends, although I should look at that. It's not that option. I don't really have anything particular I was thinking about, except I was trying to think of like an example of how my life is different today, and it's like a totally banal example, which is that I was gonna, at 7:30 I went, it was in my house, and I was like, oh, I'm gonna go to this meeting now, a little early. You know, and I found that the car keys weren't there, because I guess my boyfriend just took them and he didn't realize what he was doing. So in the past, you know, if I like was stranded without a car and like I had to be somewhere and like people were expecting me, I would have just like flipped out. You know, it would have been this like huge thing. And all I did tonight, I just like my pulse didn't even increase. You know, I like called somebody, asked for a ride, and then I got there. So that's like a really boring example of how my life is different. I grew up here. I'm a San Francisco native, and I just moved back from New York, and you know, I did for a long time. I got sober in New York, but I did kind of my like most dramatic, you know, Requiem for a Dream like drinking and using here in the Bay Area, and for a long time I was. I don't know if anybody who's new has the feeling. I felt for a long time, I was like, oh God, I've like ruined things. You know, like I thought I ruined San Francisco, which I love so much because I've like done so many terrible things there, you know, and like I could never go back to that place. And I remember hearing that there's that part in the Big Book where it talks about how the alcoholic is like a tornado, you know, and like we destroy everything. And like, there's this one phrase that always sticks in my mind, like sweet relationships are dead. You know, and I just like looked back at my life and I just saw this like waste of sweet relationships that I just like put in the ground. And but what I found is like all of that wreckage of my past, which was significant and which is some of it is irreparable, like a lot of my life has been restored in a way that I never could have expected. So for example, my father, who I was fairly estranged from when I came into AA, who I hated, I thought he was a terrible asshole, like I never, we went sometimes for 6 months or a year not speaking to each other. Like slowly over time in AA, over the course of my first few years, like I made amends to him, and today I talk to him all the time, and especially now that I'm living here because he lives in Jack London Square, like I see him all the time, and I have this wonderful relationship with my father, right? And like all these little examples of friendships of people who couldn't see me anymore. I have friends since I was like 5 years old who still live here. You know, people who, when I was drinking and using, like I couldn't even be around them because, you know, they weren't interested in just seeking any kind of oblivion they could get. So I kind of shut out all these people from my life. And what I guess this is so all over the place, but I guess the thing that's most amazing is that I'm fairly capable of leading a like orderly, non-destructive, nice life, you know. And when I was new, I couldn't even imagine, because when I drank, you know, and like I I had a, I don't know, I used to think I had like a really rough upbringing. And sometimes when I'm like in a lot of self-pity, I'm like, oh yeah, it was so hard for you. You know, and I've had periods in AA because I did have some specifically sort of extreme and strange circumstances. I've had times in AA where I was like, nobody else has suffered specifically the way that I've suffered, and therefore I do not need to let go of this resentment and this anger, which has not particularly served me well. Hard upbringing. It's not like everything, it's not that everything's been roses since I got sober. Somebody said that at a meeting I went to recently, but like I'm able to live in a way, when I was drinking. So when I was drinking, I was just like, you know, I was just like on the warpath. You know what I mean? It was like anything that I could get to just make myself feel like, to make myself feel like big. Like I was important, like I was worth something, you know, like I was really into attention, you know, whatever, it's funny, I went to a show, I saw Bob Dylan at the Paramount, and still this idea lurks in my mind where it's like, just enough people give me enough attention that somehow I'll be okay, you know? when I was drinking, I was doing everything I could to just serve these like needs that I had that I couldn't escape. Like I couldn't escape my fear, and I like the language they use in the fourth step where it talks about driven by 100 forms of fear, self-pity, self-delusion, you know, really feeling driven, like incapable of not living in this way where I created destruction all the time. Because I was like blind and but at the same time like grasping out all around me. And most of the time I don't feel that way today. And I did something on Friday that I'm particularly ashamed of, which was I got in an argument with a guy over the phone over sales tax on a storage unit in New York. And it's an amount of like $17 a month, which to me, I have this thing that my sponsor's trying to work with me on where I have this idea that everybody's trying to take my fucking money, you know? And so I got in this like shouting match with a guy I don't know on the phone. And it's amazing because that's the kind of thing I would have done all the time in the past. You know, I was like constantly getting in fights with people because my attitude is I walk through the world, which when I'm not grounded now in sobriety, like I can have this attitude of like that thing, like everybody's trying to fuck me. You know what I mean? Like I gotta watch out because somebody's gonna take something from me. Or like I was reading something in the Times about a woman who was like a waitress and she just sold her first novel for six figures and I'm a writer and I was just like, you know, and I have this idea that like other people succeeding means I'm failing. That's another thing. But so now I'm like thinking days later about how bad I feel about yelling at this man, you know? And I talked to my sponsor and I knew this is what she was gonna say. She's like, well, you should just call him and apologize. You know, and like I have experience doing that because that's what AA taught me where like I bashfully like with my tail between my legs go and make amends to people who I'm like, but they're a fucking asshole, you know, and then incredible things have come out of that. I mean, it might not with this, you know, in the back of my mind, I have this idea, I'm like, oh, maybe he'll like give me my money back, you know, that's neither here nor there. So I guess what I'm saying is like I have like tools and I've had people in my life who have like slowly over time showed me how to live in a way that's like appropriate and helpful, not just to people around me, but also ultimately to me, you know? I guess, I don't know. Okay. I'm just going to say one more thing, which is on an unrelated topic. I've realized recently that, so I've always been like, at least in my own mind, I've been like a pretty good AA, you know, like I've always sponsored, I've always done the work. I used to be like a real like, oh, thumper, you know, and, so I've always kind of thought, I do AA so much harder than everybody else. Like I don't really need to worry about it, you know, but then recently it's come to my attention that like I don't really have a relationship with that power that AA talks about, that sometimes they use the word God, like some kind of God. that's supposed to solve my problem and, you know, give me that defense against drinking that I didn't have before I came into AA and worked the steps. And I've realized recently that, like, that relationship is not strong enough. And what I'm starting to see right now is that actually I need to, and I guess I'm just saying this because I haven't done it yet, so I just need to do it, which is, like, I need to look outside, and they talk about that, and, like, you know, there's this, there where they talk about, like, look where religious people are right. Like, I'm realizing that I need to do outside work to build my spiritual life, or else I'm gonna drink, like, in AA. You know, and I guess what I'm realizing is, like, calling people and sponsoring, like, is essential for my life, but, like, there's also more that I need to do to be, like, expanding the spiritual life, or I'm, you know, probably gonna drink at some point. So that's where I'm at right now. I'm really glad to be here, so thanks for letting me speak. And gotcha.
It's all you.
How's it going, everybody? I'm Colin, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Colin.
Thank you, Francesca, for your lead. My fly's up. We're good. All right. Let's see. I'll tell you a little bit about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I'll try not to bore you all to tears. Let's see. I'm an alcoholic. Yeah, I didn't... my upbringing was pretty low-key. You know, my folks were relatively normal. I grew up in upstate New Hampshire in a rural town. There was some redneck going on there, but my mom also worked at a private school, and she was the art director, so I had that as well. So she saved me. You know, looking back, it was just like a quintessential upbringing, you know. Farmhouse adjacent to a small cat, like little dairy farm, literally covered bridge with a swimming hole like underneath it with like this little waterfall and shit you not. Just like everybody knew everybody, and it was pretty awesome place to grow up. Until of course I hit the age when I wanted to like do stuff and get out of town, and until I started getting uncomfortable basically. But yeah, my folks were educated, nice people. There was no, like, abuse in my home or anything like that. There was not a lot of drinking in my home either. My dad, I think my mother nagged the drinking out of my dad early on. So he actually didn't drink until I was a junior in high school after they got divorced. But, yeah, so that's where my alcoholism came from. But I remember my mother giving me warnings, you know, like, about my family and booze and how I needed to watch out, you know. And I was like, I was probably already like totally alcoholic by then, but, I was like, yeah, I'm going to watch out. All right. I'm going to look out for the next opportunity to get fucked up, you know? Let's see. My first drink was, after school with my buddy Ben, good friend Ben, still friends to this day. We raided his folks' liquor cabinet, and I think it was triple sec was what we drank. It was the first and last time I drank it, and it was no reason, but I remember it tasted very fruity. Am I talking about the right thing? Okay. And it was fun. It was exciting, you know? We got buzzed, and nobody barfed, and nobody peed their pants, and we didn't get in trouble, and... And I don't remember consciously making the decision that that was going to be my priority going forward. But if I look at my actions, I certainly subconsciously made that decision because that's what I looked to do from that point forward. It wasn't terribly easy in a small town, but we found ways, and you know, it was very exciting. Yeah, and I don't know, you know, smoking cigarettes was part of that too. That was kind of like was a fun, mischievous thing to do. And I remember in eighth grade, I was probably 13 at the time, 12 or 13. And in eighth grade, I decided to have this party, this big party in our barn at that farmhouse. It was a really rad farmhouse with a huge barn with three tiers, you know, hay barn. So I had this party, had my drum set out there, you know, the lights were all set up, and some folks came, I mean, the whole class came over because they had nothing better to do. So, they all came over, and some of the girls brought booze. And I didn't drink any that night, but some of these girls got fucked up. And it was just that, like, hosting that party and being, like, around that was enough for me. It was just, like, that culture, and that it was just, it was really exciting, you know. You know, we're smoking butts in the hay room, practically, and it was like a fire waiting to happen. It didn't happen, thankfully. We didn't get in trouble that night, but we couldn't keep our mouths shut, so we got in trouble, like, 3 days later. And I remember... my folks were split up by this time, and my mom came over, and they were sitting at the kitchen table. Oh, no. Oh, this is sort of the bravado of me. So a woman had overheard some kids talking about the party, and she threatened to this was a mother of another person at school. And she threatened to tell my parents, and or that word got back to me somehow. And I think I remember being on the phone with her before my folks knew about it and basically telling her to fuck off. You know, mind your own business or something. And of course, she like calls my mom after that, you know? And then my mom comes over to my dad's place and they're both sitting at the kitchen table and they say, you know, all right, get on the phone, call your friends and just give them the warning. So I had to call all my friends that were at the party and say, yo, in about 15 minutes, your folks are getting a call from my folks. So you might want to tell your folks what happened, you know? So that was totally humiliating, and I was totally, it was just like, it was horrible, and I would have done it 1,000 times over, you know? The price to play, to have that feeling of hosting that, was well worth it. Yeah. Let's see. I went to high school. So this is a recipe for disaster. My mom was the art director at this private school. It was about 300 kids. Before that was K through 8, you know, 300 kids in this teeny town. And then I went to this private school where my mom worked. And for an alcoholic, this is a bad idea to go to a school where your mom works, especially a private school. Yeah, you know, alcohol was just sort of taking over my identity by this point. You know, I was, smoking weed and eating acid by that point, by the time I was a freshman. I was just like, it became my identity, you know. I started wearing head necklaces and shit like that. And you know, all those, like, scholastics and sports, we were supposed to play two of the three seasons at the school. It was like a requirement. You know, by senior year, my buddies and I were, like, making shit up. We're like, we got to convince someone to sponsor a fishing team with, like, four members. that's sort of the slot. It was, like, organized sports and then, you know, and then I was JV outfield, like, with an afro, like, losing the ball and drinking before practice. And then senior year is, like, fishing team where we'd drive around town smoking cigarettes and, you know. But the illustration is that, like, slowly but surely, I just started giving up these things that probably should have been important, you know, school and sports and true friendships. You know, I just started messing around with folks that were doing the same thing that I was doing. And let's see. You know, I got in some bumps and scrapes there, enough where they eventually kicked me out. That's where going to the same school that your mom works at doesn't work out. I got busted. I had the sort of best of both worlds. I had a car, and I lived with my mom, who was the head of a dormitory. So I had sort of day student privileges, but I was on campus. That's also a recipe for disaster. Anyway, I got arrested in Lebanon, New Hampshire with I don't know what made me. So New Hampshire is, like, it's pretty homogenous, right? So I had these two underage Asian kids trying to buy liquor from a store with Texas IDs. You know, it's like, yeah, right, dude. Yeah, like, you're just wandering in from, you know, 89, driving through town, getting 7 cases of beer, just for the fun of it, you know. I don't know why I thought that was a good idea, but anyway, we got arrested, and then because I had boarding students in my car, that was sort of a big deal too, and the school kicked me out. They they probably had their hands tied. You know, my mom was working there, and they couldn't, like, show me special treatment. So, plus, it was kind of a big no-no to do that. So I got kicked out. I went to live with my father up in Plattsburgh, New York. Has anybody ever been to Plattsburgh, New York?
Yeah.
Right. So, got drunk there a lot. I'm sorry. yeah, you know, and I just fell in with the same group of kids up there. You know, I met my friends in the back of the chemistry class, folks that were not paying attention. And I just made, that was an easy shoo-in to make friends, you know, people that drank and used like I did. So try to fast forward a tad bit because this is probably a little dull. Yeah, I ended up sort of tried to save face and went back to the private school for my senior year. I just felt like shit because, you know, my mom was a good person and she was devastated that had gotten kicked out. And I felt like a bad person. So I, you know, I did everything that I could to get back in and basically like groveled before the headmaster and asked him to take me back. And, they did. So I did my senior year there. Oh, thankfully I didn't get kicked out again. I didn't stop like screwing around, but, you know, there were some close scrapes, you know, arrested for stealing and I talked my way out of that one. It was like, please. My mom wasn't home, so they were calling my mom, and I'm like, I will have her call you as soon as I get home. I swear to God, here's my information. If she doesn't call, you know, within the next couple of days, you can call her, and I'm totally busted. I just did not want to get arrested again. The store manager basically bought my line, and I had my sister call, like, the next day. I had a four-year-older sister. Yeah, so there's that. I could have gotten kicked out of school for that, you know. I got pulled over like half drunk with boarding students in the car, and booze in the car after drinking in Hanover, New Hampshire with a fake ID. Like my friend at the school was churning these things out, you know, like, he like bought a laminator and a printer and all this shit on a credit card and he'd return it like, these are in, you know, smart folks. Anyway, so he's churning these things out and, it's got like all of Steven Lieberman's information on it, just my picture, you know, and the date was changed. Poor Steve Lieberman, you know, he was another kid at the school. and I didn't even know that I had given the cop that ID until he came back and he's like, who's Bruce Baird on my insurance? It's my dad was on my insurance. And I'm like, why is he asking that question? I'm like, fuck, I gave him the Steven Lieberman ID, you know. Anyway, got out of that one, thankfully. I don't know how he didn't catch that, but anyway, went to college. I went to the University of New Hampshire because it was a party school. You know, I remember reading in a book, it was about a way to decide where to go to college. And it had all this useful information in the middle, and then on the margins it said what's hot and what's not. And that's kind of how I made my decision. And that same friend, Ben, and I did go look at colleges, which basically is a euphemism for like smoking mushrooms and drinking at other colleges in Western New York. But, I went to UNH and, because it was a party school and I wanted to just party. Let's see, went there. I made my friends the same way that I always made my friends and, which was through drinking. And, you know, I'm not illustrating this terribly well, but, basically, the point is that, like, at the beginning of my drink, it was a hoot. I met a lot of great people, and it was a lot of fun. And this is the middle of my drinking, and it's, like, it's kind of becoming, like, shitty. And that's what college was like. It was like, yeah, my parents, you know, no more parents, no more, I don't have to answer to anybody. And it was bong hits every morning and, like, a 12-pack of Natty Light every night. It seemed like fun. I thought it was fun, and there were fun parts, you know, for sure. I met some great people there too. But in general, it was just becoming like kind of a slog. And, nothing really of note happened that freshman year, I don't think. Not that I can recall. Yeah, I'm sure stuff happened. I was a mechanical engineering student, which is also a recipe for a disaster for an alcoholic like me. You know, by sophomore year, I was like trading mushrooms for computer programs to hand in as my assignments. And, you know, the writing's kind of on the wall when you're doing that kind of stuff. It's like, all right, you can't handle the work. Has anybody ever taken a differential equation course? Probably. It's hard when you're drinking like fucking crazy. Anyway, I was about to fail out sophomore year, so it just made sense to join a fraternity. You know, it just makes sense. join a party frat, and it was like not a, it was kind of a hippie frat, so I think they were struggling for membership or something, so they like accepted me and all the people on my floor like in one foul swoop, and we all moved in sophomore year. So this was going to be like awesome, it's going to be great, sophomore year, moved in. We weren't technically supposed to be moved in yet because they were installing some safety sprinkler system or something, but we moved in anyway. And it was supposed to be a great year, and then of course it was devastated by the fact that one of my friends fell off the roof and died as a result of getting drunk on the roof, which happens when you do that. So that was, you know, a really challenging thing for me. I had sort of, up to that point, I faced kind of a lot of instances of death, which was sad, you know. I had one of my best friends got hit and killed by a car when I was 10, you know, and then grandparents and stuff. And then this happened, and I had no emotional capabilities to grieve. I didn't know how to, like, talk about it. I didn't know how to be upset about it, but I knew how to drink, and that was sort of, it was like, it was permission for me. That was permission for me to just kind of, like, officially say fuck you to the rest of the world and do what I wanted to do. So that was the beginning, or sort of, that was the acceleration of my circling the drain, really. And I just drank like crazy and used like crazy. It was a very tragic thing. I feel terrible, you know. I have a son now, and he's very young, but I mean, I just feel for those parents. Fuck, that would be just so brutal. Very scary thing. Anyway, I drank like crazy. And then, to be honest, I don't know what the hell happened. Like, I knew that I got in trouble. I had gotten in trouble with the university for some vandalism. I don't know what I was doing. I think it was vandalism, but I was in front of some sort of, you know, panel of people that were deciding what was going to happen with me. You know, it was that situation. And they basically said I needed to go to see the school counselor or whatever, or at health services. So I went and saw that gal, and she was like, you know, by this time I had like an afro. It's gone now, but when it gets long, it was curly, and it was just like a fro, hemp necklace, and I just looked the part. I used to like listen to Fish, and sorry. It can be good, all right? It can. I'm just going to say that. I'm going to say that. All you haters, it's good. Jam bands are okay sometimes. So fuck you. My wife hates it. My wife just, it makes her skin crawl. And I don't really listen to it anymore, but... I don't. Anyway, I just looked like a mess. And this lady was like, yeah, I'm going to refer you to a licensed alcohol and drug counselor. And so I went to go see this guy on my dad's dime. He paid for it. And I went for, I don't know, my brain was just totally fried. I went for probably 6 or 8 months. I don't know. And I'd like forget to go, just be like, at this point I was like, getting stoned in the middle of the afternoon, like watching Days of Our Lives. That's what was going on with me. It's real high class. Anyway, I went to go see this guy, and I remember he had 25 years clean. He showed me his medallion. I don't know what that meant. I was just like, whatever, dude. I don't know. I cannot compute. You know, my little 10 watt brain was just like, I was like, it was intriguing. That was a little intriguing. And the gift that he gave to me was, he talked about the craving, and he differentiated that from normal drinkers. And he said that alcoholics, when they take booze into their body, they have difficulty moderating or stopping. And you should go to AA. You should check out AA. You need to say every week, you'd like give me another meeting list, and I'd be like, okay, yeah, sure. And he would humor me, you know, I'd like want him to, I wanted my car to be less shitty and my girlfriend to like have sex with me more and like be different. And I wanted my friends to be different. And I just wanted to be happier. I just wanted to be happy. You know, I felt like such a victim. And he'd humor me and like talk to me about that. And then he'd be like, yeah, you should go to AA. finally, I broke down and went to AA. I'm not sure where in that span of time it was, but yeah, I remember it was a noontime meeting and it was in health services on campus and there was this quad and I was just, it was just like treadmill, just like, oh my God, everybody knew where I was going. I felt like I had just lost at life. I felt like everybody knew that Colin was a total loser and there's traffic driving by and I'm just like sweating bullets and I didn't want to go in and, you know, and I went in, you know, and it was like four people. And I was surprised to find that there were women there and there were younger people there because I had this image in my head about what it was. And I was intrigued then too. Like that's kind of it. I didn't hear any zingers. Nobody saved my life that night. Well, I mean, I guess in a way, yeah. But there was no like aha moments. But I left and I came back. Again, the last 6 months of my drinking, the first 6 months of my sobriety are a tad bit of a blur. But I did keep coming back. I think there was a summer in between that. And I remember I was trying not to drink. Ugh. For an alcoholic, trying not to drink without some suitable replacement for alcohol is like torture, as some of you probably are familiar with. It just sucks, you know. It's hard to live life sober without booze, for me. Anyway, I remember my sobriety started getting momentum when I started going to some different meetings, some nighttime meetings. And I will make a point to talk about Mike. Mike was this big bodybuilder dude, and he was, like, into sports and like not like me. And he was at those noontime meetings when I was first sort of like dabbling in it. And, I feel really, super grateful that he was just nice to me. Excuse me. The dude was just like nice. And he wasn't shoving any shit down my throat. And he just checked in with me. He's like, how's it going, man? After a meeting. Sorry. So, that shit is important. Excuse me. Jesus. That was intense. Yeah. Thank you. Great. All right. It's very important. He was really nice. And he was just checking in, you know, super nice about it. And he was encouraging, and that was it, you know. And I always remember that. So, and that was kind of the simplicity of that interaction with another AA that was like trying to open the door for me and be welcoming. So, anyway, my meeting attendance started gaining momentum, and it was terribly uncomfortable for new people to. I mean, you guys know you were all new at one point. It's fucking uncomfortable, you know. I would come in late. And then I would kind of hang around afterwards and don't talk to me, but please, for the love of God, talk to me. You know, that was kind of like how I felt. I'm dying to go to coffee, but I just don't want to talk to you. It's just a hard place to be. So I do encourage people, newcomers, that if you're feeling like you're farting around outside of a meeting and no one's asking you to go to coffee, just go to coffee. I think that find a group and go to coffee. Just tag along. I think that's important too. a couple minutes left, so I'm going to try to speed this up. But I found my first sponsor in AA in that Tuesday night meeting. After I'd gone for several weeks, and I got him for all the wrong reasons. He was in a band and looked like he was funny. But it turned out that I lucked out because he had experience with the steps and he knew how to lead a person through the big book and he was serious about sobriety. So he got me reading right away and he told me to hit my knees and I was, to pray. And I remember when he made that suggestion, because he immediately sort of rescinded and said, "Oh, chill out, man." Because I was like, "Wait, what?" He's like, "You hit my knees." What the hell are you talking about? You know? Because I was, I don't know where I picked this up, but I was like pretty anti-religious and cagey about that kind of stuff. I'm not sure why, but anyway, he saw the look on my face and he's like, "All right, just try it. Just you don't have to pray to anything, you know, serious, just like pray to whatever, your fucking ceiling or your doorknob, but just do the action really." I remember doing that. That was terribly uncomfortable too. Everything in AA, when you first do it, is terribly uncomfortable. If it's, I don't know, maybe not, but it was for me. It was very hard to do this stuff. Felt very weird. Oh, excuse me. Yeah, and he got me reading the book, the big book, you know. I remember being really, really interested in the doctor's opinion when it talks about the craving. I could really relate with that kind of stuff. And they really smashed out, like, the last flicker of hope that, like, maybe I wasn't an alcoholic. I was 20 at the time, you know, and I was fucking miserable. You know, I was dreaming, I would fantasize about checking out. Like, how can I check out in the most heroic, sad way so you all would be upset that I was gone? You know, it's like all that kind of self-pity. Let me tell you, I mean, nobody comes into AA tap dancing, and neither did I. It was a shitty end, you know. We're hopeful. And they were able to stamp out that last flicker that, you know, maybe it was just a fucking phase, you know. It's not a fucking phase, let me tell you that. Not for me, anyway. Anyway, got me going in the book. And we got busy, like, working the steps out of the big book, you know. Took a third step and started writing a fourth step. I did a really involved fourth step, which I think was awesome for me. It took me a while, and it took, like, a lot of discipline. But it just, like, totally spun my head around about, like, how I had been making a hard path for myself, you know. I was full of rage and fear. And I didn't know that. I didn't know. I just thought, like, the world was, like, trying to take all my money or, like, trying to fuck me somehow. And I was just on fire with anger and resentment. So the fourth step really, like, blew my socks off in that way. And it helped me develop a relationship with my higher power by writing that fourth step with God's help, you know. That helped me with that discipline. And I met the most amazing, I had a lot of fun in early sobriety too. I really encourage, like, new people to find your people that are serious about sobriety and then go have some fun too, you know. I mean, don't fuck around with, like, goofing off and not doing steps, but get a sponsor, do the steps, and then have some fun, you know. Because I think that's really important, finding friends in AA. There's a lot of wonderful, awesome, totally genius, interesting people in this room. All walks of life. It's so trippy that we all, like, hang out or get together. I mean, it's really cool. So I encourage you to find your people and have fun. And then it's been a long time since all that stuff happened. You know, I got sober when I was 20. I'm only 24 now. That was in 97, November 20th of 97. So I'm coming up on 17 years, which is, it's weird because time goes by when you get older and stuff happens. But it's also, it was pointed out to me through one of my sponsees' experiences recently, who struggled and sort of got tripped up on some cavalier attitude around medication, and he got to this "oh shit, did I relapse" moment, and I was like, in talking to him, I was just he was really hung up on whether he had, and that's a gray area, but. I was just thinking, like, it doesn't fucking matter. Like, what matters is, what am I doing today? Like, right now, how am I doing today? Am I sober today? What am I doing today? And, I mean, I like saying that I almost have 17 years, but, but really, it doesn't matter, you know? What matters is how I feel, and am I sober today, you know? And sometimes I don't feel great, you know? I have been resting on my laurels for a little while. And I think that's easy to do when, you know, sobriety is habitual and, you know, I'm super comfy and I got a ton of shit that I wanted, you know, and all the exterior stuff looks really awesome. But it's ridiculous. Like how many, I just have to learn those lessons, you know, it's like, you can see it coming. You're like, oh, I'm seeing all these people learn this lesson and they're talking about it. And then here I am learning that lesson. You know, and I've learned this one over and over, that when I slack and I feel less inspired and I think back to those early days and I look at the people with like 1-2 years in AA that are just like, yeah, fuck, it's a Friday. And I'm like, man, I want what that dude has, you know? Anyway, my challenge as of late is to, find the willingness to recommit to, really expanding my spiritual life, like you were talking about. Cause I've been doing a great job of that lately. But yeah, AA saved my life. I'm totally grateful. I am not owned by fear and resentment anymore. I had a resentment, a pretty actually strong one recently this past week. And it, you know, those are of note because I never have them. I swear to fucking God. I was staring at the ceiling thinking about this person. And that shit does not happen to me. I do not stay awake at night. That's partly because I have two kids and they run me ragged. But it's also because I AA has allowed me a life that is free from fear and resentment. And thank God, because no wonder I drank. If I felt like this all the time, I'd drink. Totally. And I didn't get sober to, like, be angry. AA saved my life. Yeah. So, all you new people, and you're a lot of transplants, welcome. I'm not from here either, and it was an adjustment to come here and sort of get used to AA here and find my people here, sort of start over. That was a pain in the ass. But there are wonderful people here. There are wonderful meetings here, and this is a great part of the country to be sober in. Anyway, I think that's it. Thanks.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.